Welcome to another episode of my podcast, Sincerely Jada, a podcast hosted by yours truly, Jada Amoy. And if this is your very first time listening, this podcast is dedicated to learning and unlearning. This episode is a special bonus episode where I will be having a conversation in honor of Black History Month. So I have some special guests, Moyo and Tosin from Peas in a Podcast, who are essentially going to join me to discuss our experience as Black women, the good, the bad, the pressure, not only to defy negative stereotypes, but to fit into a certain box. But before that, I'll give my guests a chance to introduce themselves, and then we'll have a bit of a more lighthearted conversation to start.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tosin. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you again, Jada, for inviting us to be on this podcast. I'm very excited for the conversation that we're going to have today. I am the co-host of Peas in a Podcast. I co-host with Moyo. Outside of Peas in a Podcast, I am a registered nurse. So I work in Toronto, Canada, but I'm also a creative. And so I like doing things outside of healthcare creatively. And yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Moyo. I currently work as a talent acquisition specialist, or a lot of people know it as recruiter. So whichever is easier for you. I was previously in accounting and now I'm HR. So outside of work, I enjoy podcasting. So like Tosin said, she co-hosts with me and we both have the podcast called Peas in a Podcast. I also enjoy listening to podcasts as well. In addition to that, I really love reality TV shows such as like Love is Blind. I'm really excited that a new season is out. It was out on Valentine's Day. So very excited and I'm keeping up with that. And I also just enjoy living my best life. Yeah.
Yeah. So before we get into our more kind of serious, more structured discussion, I have a few fun icebreaker questions that I wanted to ask you if that's okay to kind of, you know, start things off light.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the first one is apple juice or orange juice?
Orange juice. I really only just drink mostly water and like alcohol, but that is it. Anything else, I just rather. But if I had to pick up, I'm
actually very offended by Moyo's answer.
Sorry.
We've been friends for years. Well, actually, I'm not too surprised, but I'm an apple juice kind of girl. It's like not the end of the world if I'm stuck with orange juice, but it's just something about apple juice. It's so crisp. It's so refreshing.
Yeah. Orange juice is one juice that you absolutely cannot drink warm because it tastes really bad unless it's super cold.
Do you guys drink apple juice when it's warm or like?
I mean, maybe room temperature, not warm. Warm is a bit much. You could if you needed to.
And yeah, like obviously I wouldn't pick like warm apple juice, but if you have like apple juice that's sitting, like especially juice boxes, they're just at room temperature, like on the counter or something. If you have that, it doesn't suck. Orange juice, I agree with you, Jada, that it will suck if you take that like room temperature.
That's fair. So the next one is, if you were in a sticky situation and you could only call one member of your family, who would you call and why? And Tosin, you can answer this one first if you'd like.
That's a good question. Whoever I say, the rest of my family members will be very offended. I will call my middle sister. So I'm the oldest out of three, pretty small family. But I think I'll call my younger sister. So my sister, who is just like 3 years younger than me, just because we live together. I feel like she's the one I see the most. The rest of my family, they live in Nigeria. So my middle sister is the only one who lives with me in Canada. So ideally, if I'm in a situation, she's also the only one that could physically help me. So yeah, I'll say my middle sister.
I don't know who I would pick. I think I would pick my sister as well, but like she could start freaking out and that's going to make me freak out. So if I had to pick, if my dad were to be in Canada, because my parents are both in Nigeria, I would choose my dad, to be very honest, which is an interesting answer.
Now that's fair. You got to go with the most level-headed. So the next one is, if you had to sing one song word for word to win a cash prize, what song would you choose?
This sucks for me because I don't listen to that much music.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you know how you get your Spotify rap at the end of the year? Mm-hmm. Last year, it said I listened to only like 6,000 minutes worth of music, about like 4 days worth of music. And I don't listen to that much music. But if I could pick one, I feel like it'll be like a Beyonce song, like dangerously in love, I feel like I have that in the bag.
What about Drake? I thought you were...
True. I can spit some bars too.
Moya, what about you?
Okay, one, I'm terrible with lyric. Like, if anyone knows me, they know that, like, yeah, I'm just terrible with lyrics. But if I had to pick, I think I'm going to do Moment for Life by Nicki Minaj. I know she's going through it right now, but Moment for Life. Or maybe Camp Rock when, like, Joe and Demi were singing. And yeah, maybe one of those kind of songs, or High School Musical, something like that.
Can I say another answer? I changed my mind. I don't know if everyone listened to this podcast listens to Afrobeats. There's this artist, Ashakem, who he has this song called Lonely at the Top. And Moyo, it's actually in a specific Nigerian language called Yoruba. And Moyo actually took the time, because I'm not Yoruba, she took the time to teach me the song word for word.
I was very proud.
I feel like I'm better with lyrics when it comes to like old school R&B. So I think maybe I do like Until the End of Time. I don't know if you know that one with Justin Timberlake and Beyonce.
Yes.
Finally, in honor of Black History Month, what is one thing that you love about your culture?
I don't know if you know this, like, about like Nigerians. We're very, very proud of our culture and where we come from. Like, this is the best question ever. The one thing I love the most about my culture would definitely have to be the food. It just hits the spot. Jollof rice, suya. There's just a lot of amazing foods across the entire country. And so, like, so much diverse foods, too. I think it would definitely be one of my favorite things about being, like, Nigerian and my culture.
Mm-hmm. Food is always a good one.
Yeah.
I love how communal or, like, community focused we can be. A lot of Nigerians, wherever they find themselves, like Nigerians would be all the way in like Japan, and they will still find a way to be together regardless of not knowing each other. You're like, you're Nigerian, I'm Nigerian, okay, cool, let's be besties, or like let's just look out for one another, right? So, and I think I also find that with the Black community as well. You could just be taking a walk and you have Black girls who could just, you know, smile at you. Just that, like, I see you, we're in this together. And I just love that about my culture and just being Black and being Nigerian. But I also really love the music. I really, really enjoy Afrobeats and how it's sort of evolving as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for both your responses. I'm, in terms of background, my mom is Jamaican and then my dad's Ghanaian. And then my fiance is Nigerian. So he put me on Jollof rice.
Oh, man.
A few different things, especially Burna Boy, which he likes to take credit for. So definitely see a lot of the points you're making. Yeah. So that'll bring us into our first discussion point. So like I said, this episode is all about being Black. So the three of us, we are Black women. So we're going to discuss our overall experiences, starting with the aspect of being placed in a box. Whether it was when you were growing up or present day, have you ever had an interest or aspect of your personality that you were made to feel was abnormal for you as a Black girl? And Tosin, if you want to answer this one first.
My experience is a little different just because for majority of, although like 10 decades, well, not 10 decades, a decade of my life, I've lived in Canada and experienced like what it means to be Black in a Western culture. Majority of my life experiences are from when I lived in Nigeria. And I feel like that is a little different just because, one, it is a predominantly like Black country. And so even if I felt like I had like a weird personality, it was never othered to be, oh, this is something that's weird for a Black girl. It was just like, that's weird. there wasn't any emphasis on my Blackness with the first 15 years of my life. After I moved to Canada, it became very, very clear that there are specific boxes in the Western culture like Black women are supposed to fit in. I find that in public spaces, I'm a little bit more introverted. And sometimes, especially at work, people are a little bit surprised by that because I feel like they have the idea in their head that like Black women are very outgoing, very outspoken, very in your face. And so I'm more of like, especially in public spaces, more of on the shy end. I'm also into like K-pop, which some people find like a little weird. And maybe I'm just not deep in it too much because like I also really don't care what people think. But I don't think of any specific moment right now, anyways, in my personal life that I feel othered because it doesn't fit like a stereotype of what a Black woman could be. But that's also majority because half of my life experiences was in a predominantly Black country. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I definitely relate because being an immigrant and being raised in Nigeria specifically, I've never had to question my Blackness because everybody is Black. If anything, I had to question being a woman and what it is to be fitting in that stereotype of being like an African Nigerian girl. So I guess with like even International Women's Day coming up, I guess maybe this can tie into it better. But Nigeria is very, it's a very predominantly patriarchal country. You know, like, why are you speaking up? Why are you questioning this? Why are you pushing back on certain things? Why are you being adventurous? Why are you being outspoken? And I think that's where I find myself to be abnormal in that sense. As a Black woman, I feel like being adventurous by myself, I like to try and like travel to different places. I've not had a lot in my experience, but so far, I don't think I'm picky with a lot of the foods that I eat. I love to enjoy people's culture. I went on exchange to Australia because I was just like, yeah, like I can do it. And like being the only one of like the only Black people in like a group of like, let's say 1,000 was just wild to me. And I think in this day and age, like traveling, experiencing multiple cultures, whenever you see Black women in those spaces, people always get taken aback. For example, if I were to go to, let's say, somewhere in Southeast Asia, someone could maybe, you know, ask to take a picture of me because they've never seen a Black person before. So things like that, being in spaces where a lot of the time Black women or Black people aren't typically being seen, I've also felt like me being sassy, me being loud could throw up some people that aren't necessarily Black or other people of color. So those are some of the aspects, but nothing really that I care about.
Yeah, well, that's really good that you don't care, because in those spaces, sometimes it can feel like everybody's watching you or everybody's wondering what you're doing there. But yeah, it's something that as Black people in general, but especially as Black women, we're always mindful of, because there are certain things that are seen as not our type of thing to do, or certain places where it's like, what are you doing here? Like, why would you come here type of thing? So it's something that's really interesting to think about. And I'd say for me, when I grew up, I was really quiet and shy. And I know that a lot of times when Black women are more reserved, it's seen as a shock because you're oftentimes portrayed as so loud, so in your face, so bold. So when you're kind of more shy, you're more reserved, it's seen as either being rude or weird. So I definitely grew up being that weird Black girl. Like, usually sometimes, like, especially growing up in, I wouldn't say I ever grew up in like a predominantly white space, but I would say since I was younger, I think I've always been told that I talk a certain type of way. And I know a lot of people relate to that, like being seen as more posh just because you use big words. And that's definitely something that I've experienced, and that made me feel like I was just like a little bit bougie, a little bit posh. And that wasn't obviously my intention, but I feel like that's the way that you're seen when you act a certain type of way. I don't know if either of you can relate to that.
When I moved to Canada and I went to university, my first 2 years of university, my program was split into two. So 2 years was in a college in a city called Barrie. And if you're not familiar with Canada, Barrie is a very Caucasian city. It is predominantly white, and the people I went to school with were predominantly white too. And I remember this memory sticks with me so much. I remember I was in first year and I was in a specific class, and we were being asked to introduce ourselves. And so I introduced myself, and they asked like, where are you from? What's your background? And I'm like, oh, I'm born and raised in Nigeria. And after the class, this girl literally walked up to me and she was like, oh my God, was it very difficult to learn English? And like just the expectation that not just also being like a Nigerian person, but she was like actually so shocked that I was well-spoken. And like, I couldn't believe the disbelief on her face, because I'm like, is this like because I'm an African thing, or is this just like because I'm a Black woman? Like, I don't understand where this question is coming from. But I definitely feel you in that speaking aspect. Like, when you have conversations with people and you are well spoken, sometimes I feel like people are taken aback. But yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from in regards to that when it comes to like speaking.
I think for me, I tend to be a little dramatic whenever I speak, and like I tend to be very cartoony or like sassy in a way. I wouldn't use the word sassy, but these are like just terms that people would put on me saying, oh, wow, you're so salty. Oh, you're so sassy. And I think it's because of the way that I speak. So I don't really relate with just the aspect of being well-spoken, except I'm in a Nigerian setting where they're like, oh, because you've like moved to Canada now, you know, you can't really relate with us. Like, your accent has changed. But also at work, for example, if I am like speaking in my Nigerian accent, even when I'm being very articulate with what I'm saying, a lot of the people would just be really taken aback by that. Like, even if they can like understand what I'm saying, or if I'm using my hands a lot when I'm talking, they just always, I don't know, just make side eyes or just kind of like look a certain way, look really surprised by that. They're like, oh, is that still English? And I'm like, yes, you just got to pay attention. Those are some of like the aspects when it comes to speaking that I've had experiences with. I think it's a thing of just trying to advocate for yourself while you're speaking and while people make comments or have looks and have stares like that.
This really relates to the next point I wanted to discuss, which is popular culture, because we've seen a lot of supposed representation, and we don't know whether it's performative or not, but either way, we've seen a lot of discussion surrounding the increase of representation of Black women in popular culture, whether it be in movies, magazines, or just on social media. But it's also been pointed out that many of the Black women who are embraced, they share similar features. An example could be looser hair patterns, lighter skin, etc. So do you feel that society pushes a certain image of the acceptable Black woman? And if so, how has this idea influenced the way that you view yourself?
I think society continues to push the type of Black woman that they accept. And I think social media plays a huge role in that. I think our society finds Black women who are lighter, who are mixed with something other than Black, to be more palatable to their taste buds. For example, Kerry Washington or Zendaya, Beyonce. I think those women are beautiful. I think they're doing great work and I fully support all of them. But I think they're also acceptable because they are on the lighter side of things. They're either mixed. And I know people are like, no, Beyonce is not mixed, but she's more acceptable because she is lighter. Her body shape is also acceptable. But women like, let's say, Viola Davis or Lupita Nyong'o or Lizzo, those are women who are darker skinned. And some of them, so like Lizzo is plus size and they've had to work extra hard and work twice as hard to get half of what, let's say, Zendaya can get, because they are either plus size or they're darker skin or they're even African as well, or have like African descent. I think it's really interesting because I think now in social media, there's this whole narrative of Black girl luxury. There's like feminine era that is also now the acceptable Black girl, at least to what I see on TikTok, because I am always on TikTok. I love TikTok. So whenever I see like Black girl luxury on my For You page, I'm always like, this has a lot of views, and it's really hard to get views on TikTok sometimes and to figure out the algorithm. But people who appear to be put together, that seem really beautiful, appealing to the eyes, which are typically people who are lighter and are skinnier, are just acceptable. And I think now I have to like try and figure out, oh, how can I show up and present myself in a way that is acceptable? I think now that I have a job that allows me to pay for certain self-care activities, like maybe doing my hair more often or taking care of my skin or having glowy skin whenever I don't have makeup. I think those are things that I now pressure myself to look a certain way. So I'm like, oh, my hair,
I can't just have my hair out. If I take my braids out, I need like a week max and I need to like have another hairstyle. These are just the things that I now have accepted or I have oddly been influenced by. So yeah, and I have a lot more thoughts, but I'll let Chosen talk. Actually, as you were speaking, just made me to realize that a lot of the time I'm always saying like, because I grew up in like a predominantly Black country, I'm always like, maybe I don't experience it to the same level as people who grew up in like a Western culture. But now that I think back to it, the idea of what it meant to be also a quote unquote acceptable Black girl like transcends the African continent too because of like colonization. I remember growing up and the amount of perms I got as a kid just to make sure that my hair was like straight. And back then they would tell you that the reason you're doing this is because it makes your hair easier to grow, like deal with. My mom will say, I don't have the energy to deal with your natural hair. And nothing wrong with perms. I love perms now. But when I look back at why our society then was so interested in making sure that we all had straight hair. I remember I would go to school. I used to go to boarding school. And my mom would give me creams. She's like, oh, I went to school in like a really hot place in Nigeria. My mom's like, oh, I don't want you to get darker while you're in school. And all this like little comments that our society makes. And obviously, I don't think my mom was saying anything to me or like even the people around me were saying anything to me in with malicious intent. Because this is the ideas and the ideologies that they grew up with personally. But the idea is still all based on the closer you are to whiteness, the more acceptable you are. I don't know if you guys saw the interview with Taraji P. Henson when she was just talking about her struggles, booking jobs and also like her pay and everything. It just seems like the farther you are away from whiteness to some level, you just have to work twice as much just because you're not in that acceptable category. And it's also hard to like differentiate that now that we're in an era, like in a woke era where everyone is claiming like diversity and inclusion. And you always have to question like, am I here because they accept me fully as who I am and how I present as a Black woman, or are they just trying to like fill a quota? So it's all so complicated. Something that I've definitely struggled with, especially living in Canada, is just redefining what womanhood and like femininity is as a Black woman, because it almost feels like you are not allowed to experience femininity without being like, for example, I think of in the summer when you have all these people in sundresses and like all this like very cute outfits, I find like even to experience that, like a lot of Black women end up being over-sexualized. It just feels like there's a level of womanhood that you can't fully experience just because it's almost become like a restricted area for us. I even think about from my experience with healthcare and just the amount of tragedy that's happened with just like Black women being pregnant and like going through like pregnancy and like just labor and stuff like that. We are seen as the strong, strong ones. You hear stories, like horrible stories of women and Black women not being listened to, Black women's pain not being taken seriously. It just feels like there's a level of femininity and womanhood like you can't tap into by just existing as a Black woman in like a Western society, which kind of sucks. But yeah.
That's such a good point, especially when you touched on like there's certain things or just certain things that you may want to wear or do that you just feel as though you can't do without it being seen a certain type of way. And I like that you even brought in that strong Black woman trope as well, because in general, like a lot of different races, they're seen as people who need to be protected. They're seen as vulnerable and all these things. And I don't feel like we're seen the same way. Like we're seen as she's good, she can handle the pain, or just constantly being seen as though you can take whatever's thrown at you, I feel like contributes to some of the treatment that you see and that you were talking about as well, Tosin.
Yeah. A thought just came to my head. Like most of the Black women who aren't deemed as acceptable, so those that are like unacceptable, or like, let's say if they're into rap, if they're being extra vulgar with their words, if they're being really sexual as well, they're not being accepted. But then when, let's say we have someone who is white or other people who are from other ethnicities do it, they're more accepted. I think there's like an episode of maybe was Insecure or like one of the shows that Issa Rae produced. But basically, there's like this white rapper who would do literally everything. She would wear cornrows. She would look a certain way, act a certain way, talk a certain way. And she would get a lot more followers and get a lot more acceptance and people listen to her music versus the other Black women who were not even dressing as sexual and they were still not accepted. So it's just crazy to me how it works, because it's like even better content that a lot of these Black people produce and like give to society and like social media. But yeah.
I also even wanted to add to the conversation in like the term with us using like acceptable Black woman. In the end, I also still think it's a lose-lose situation, because the people who end up falling into the acceptable box, there's also only so far in society that you're accepted. In the end, you are still a Black woman. Look at, for example, it just passed the Grammys. And in many ways, Beyoncé falls into the quote-unquote the acceptable Black woman, and just in the way she looks, and how she's a little bit more reserved, her skin tone. But in the end, you have situations where, isn't it like the album of the year, no Black woman has won in like 25 years. If you think about it, how acceptable is the acceptable Black woman? And so I don't want to make it also seem like, oh, these people who are deemed like the acceptable Black girls have won and they've gotten a W, because in the end, I still feel like it's almost a lose-lose situation, which is why you can't chase that standard of acceptable Black woman, because you're just going to push yourself to get to a point and there's just a point that society is going to fight back to not let you go further.
Mm-hmm. They're essentially saying that you're acceptable in comparison to other Black women, but you're still not ever going to be on the level of white women. You're not going to ever be on the level of these other people, but we'll take you and we'll accept you because we have to accept some of you. I think another layer of this conversation I wanted to talk about is just the fact that we were talking about the high standards that Black women are held to. And I think that there's oftentimes this expectation that they almost have to prove their femininity. A lot of that is rooted in body type, because I feel like Black women, our bodies are very largely hypersexualized. Mm. And because we're seen as, you know, being that race that possesses the certain type of body, you know, the big butt, the flat stomach, all of these things, we're constantly held to that standard. So if you have a Black woman who doesn't necessarily fit that mold, she's kind of looked down at. And then a lot of other races of men might be trying to access a Black woman solely for those reasons. Mm. It gets to the point where sometimes you see even Black men, those kind of standards, because you are a Black woman, they're holding you to certain standards that if they were to be outside of their race, they wouldn't probably have those same standards. Mm-hmm. And I think it just places, again, that idea that you have to be constantly put together and that your proof of femininity is in your body. It's not in anything else.
Yeah. Sometimes I think about where that ideology in regards to like just body and body image comes from. Because yes, a lot of Black women have been blessed with beautiful endowed bodies. But if you put like Black women all together and like just account for everyone, we have so much diverse body types, which is why in the beginning when I kept saying I don't care, I've adopted that idea of I don't care just because there's no winning. Because they want you to have like the big bum and then the big boobs. And then you have Black women who are skinny and they're like, oh, you don't look like what we consider Black women to look like. And then you have people who are like on the bigger side, still with big bum, and they're also like, you're too big. Like there's no winning in most of the situations unless you look unrealistic. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of people, what I consider unrealistic, there are a lot of people that have that body type naturally, but it is not the common body type.
Yeah.
Nowhere to be the average. So the idea that we're always so over-sexualized, and then you want to kind of attain like this body type that media has portrayed to be like the sexiest or the good looking. But then the window is just so small, because if you just go 1 kg above that, you're too big. And if you're 1 kg below that, you're too small. And so that's why I adopt the energy of like, and it's not easy, and it's something that I'm still working on. But I'm like, I honestly don't care, because like there's no, once you start chasing the standards, there's no winning.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And then they want you to have all of these things, the body, but then they want you to either cover it all up.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, you gain 1 pound, maybe you were eating a little bit on Christmas, and it's just over for you. And it's just not fair at all.
Yeah.
And before we switch topics, I also just want to touch on, I feel like, I'm not sure if you both find this as well, but in many Black cultures, there's so much pressure and criticism from family when it comes to appearance. Yeah. Like, for example, it's said that you won't find a husband if you do this, you won't find a husband if you do that. And a lot of it is rooted in your physical looks, because it's like you need to be put together or your husband's not going to find you. You're just relaxing in the house and you're just laying on the couch. Like, they're still telling you that you need to get your hair together and that you need to look this certain type of way. Whereas other people are throwing on track pants and a top. Like, you can go to Walmart and see people in track pants and pajama pants, and it's not really seen as something that's anything serious. But for us, it's like, no, you're not going to find a husband because of that.
As much as it's a societal issue where racism is like influenced a lot of that, I think a part of it is how we also see each other within the community. Like, a lot of other people from different cultures can like go out, put their hair in a bun, but like if I try to do a bun, one, it's going to look scary to them. It's like, oh, your edges aren't being done. Like, they have edges as well. So it's really acceptable in other ethnicities. And then, for example, if I were to, okay, I don't want to wear my bun anymore, I want to cover the hair and wear a bonnet, I can do that in peace. So it's like, you can't win, like Tosin was saying. And I think a lot of how our body image gets more and more, a lot of why people, at least for me, I can speak for myself, is when I have like a negative body image at a certain time in my life, is some of the time it can get triggered by either family members, could be this auntie that I've never, like, I haven't seen in forever, or it could be people who are even closer to me than just like an extended family. So a lot of the issue sometimes is how we've really accepted and digested all of the standards that society has placed, and how we need to meet this beauty standard, which is always white. It's just sort of changed how we look at ourselves, and then it just trickles down to generations to generations. And it's almost like a generational curse, which is why I just feel like racism itself has just, they did a really good job in terms of like,
not a good job.
It's just so much wound has been made and so much like injury, and it's just hard to get through. So I think it affects a lot of different things, especially body image, and we don't even see it sometimes. So, but yeah.
And just to add to the conversation about like just even body image and like family members making comments and stuff like that. And I don't want us to seem like, wah, 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 we're like crying and everything, like we have so much to complain about. Even though, yes, we do. I feel like being a Black woman can also be difficult, because not only do you just have to deal with the issues of being first Black and dealing with racism and everything and all the standards that have been put on us just because we're Black alone, then add to the cake patriarchy across the spectrum. Like, it's different for Black women, and it's amplified because of like racism and our race. But just one, existing as a woman in our society is already pretty difficult when it comes to like body image issues, and just the patriarchal standards of how, oh, I want my woman to be like covered up, and like you're more acceptable if you're covered up, but I want her to be like freaky at the same time. It's like there's also no winning just as a woman and just with patriarchal standards. And so I feel like as a Black woman, it's just a little bit more complex for us because we're really double minorities.
Mm-hmm. It just all comes together to just make everything so much more stressful.
Yeah.
Like, why bother? But that really ties into the last question I wanted to get your thoughts on. So we know in a lot of workplaces, we're constantly being looked at as kind of the underdogs. We're being looked at as, Moyo said, you know, we're seen as the sassy ones, the people who are not really getting things done, the people who are coming in every other week with a new hairstyle. How do you cope with the pressure that we sometimes feel to overperform or overcompensate just to avoid being perceived negatively in professional spaces? Moyo, would you like to answer first?
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I do to cope is really to look for mentorship and to look for people who look like me. And I've been fortunate enough to have that experience. I've been at companies where I either have someone who's Black on my team or have someone who's Black and they are like either a manager in a different team where I can reach out for a coffee chat and just ask, not just maybe not to be a mentor right off the bat, but just to ask about their career experience, what they've like been through, how they've experience corporate Canada as a Black woman. Most of the time I approach Black women. So I think it's really looking for Black professionals that can relate on that level, because as much as you can find people in the same industry as you, there's a different layer of difficulty when you're navigating the corporate world. And it because of that different layer, you have to find someone who also understands and is connected to their roots and understands where you're coming from. Because imagine you have like a mentor who is not Black and you're trying to explain all these things to her or to them, just trying to explain different issues that you're facing, and you think it's because you're a Black person, you're going to have a different side of like affirmation if you were to go to a Black person than if you were to go to someone who's not Black. So I think finding a safe space at work, this could be like a work friend or someone who's maybe not at your company, but someone who's also a Black person in corporate and trying to understand, and even maybe seeking mentorship outside of your company. It doesn't always have to be internal. So I think that's one way that I try to deal with overcompensating you. And also just showing up authentically in my workspace. I think sometimes I can tend to be dramatic with the way I talk or be a little funny with the way I talk. But I think I try to even like bring out my Nigerian accent more. I try not to code switch as much. And sometimes I do it more often just because I'm like, okay, this people are not going to listen to what I have to say. And so I have to like speak differently or make sure I don't mess up this presentation or try to ensure that like completing my work on time and being the best of the best, just so they don't think, oh, like she has a new hairstyle and like she didn't get that job done. Like what's going on here? So I think I try to be as authentic and as like diligent as I can at work. Those are some of the ways that I cope.
I definitely agree with a lot of things what you have said. Definitely finding people. I always say all the time, there's power in multitudes. Finding people who share similar experiences, so meaning other Black professionals or just people who value you in the space. I always say I'm a recovering people pleaser and overperformer. I feel like I have to constantly remind myself that I too deserve a soft life. Like, I have to tell myself all the time, it's like because you feel. And obviously, there's also like a lot of privilege in that sentence. But even when I'm not even being asked to overperform, it just feels like almost innately designed by trauma and like your life experiences that I'm like, Tosin, you're doing too much. Like, take a breather. Like, look at everybody else. Everyone is relaxed. And there's spaces where you don't have the luxury to do that. But I have to remind myself, if I am not going to receive any direct consequences from that, I have to remind myself that I have the right to be a baby girl, to live a soft life like every other person around me. And this is why choosing your space wisely is very important. Like at your workplaces, like when you get interviews and stuff, you have to ask these people questions. That's something that I started to learn, being aware of what the workplace culture is like. And obviously, this is not for situations like I didn't have that much luxury coming out from school where you kind of just want a job and I'm just like, anyone please hire me. But now that I've grown in my career, I'm like, I need to pay attention. When I have the opportunity to, I should choose my spaces wisely. I don't need to choose a hard life. I don't need to choose like spaces where I need to fight tooth and nail to like show myself. And I'm grateful for people who go into this predominantly white spaces and revolutionize the entire space and are leaders and change makers and everything. But I always have to remind myself that in no aspect of my life, I don't need to be a revolutionarist and philanthropist and making sure that I am grinding tooth and nail just to convince people that don't value me that I'm worth being in this space. I can choose spaces where I'm valued. And so that's something that I started to realize. Like, if people are giving you bad vibes, please look for other jobs. And you have the luxury to, like, look for other jobs, look for spaces where you're valued, because especially as Black women, we have been put in a certain box in society that we are, if you look at all the Civil War movements and like all major movements in society, half of it is built on the back of Black women. We've been given this title of the support of society. We have to have the hardest brunt of it. And I'm like, I'm choosing a different narrative for myself. And in certain spaces, I'm going to speak up. In certain spaces, I'm going to make sure that I am pushing for a change. But I don't have to, reminding myself that I too deserve to live and exist in spaces where I can take deep breaths too, where I can exist without feeling like I am pushing myself and grinding myself. And sometimes maybe the luxury is that I don't have the luxury to do that in work just because of life situations and economy, but making sure that outside of work, I have spaces where I can exist authentically and places that replenish my energy and feed into me and speak to me and give me life and give me the room and freedom to exist fully as who I am as a Black woman, so that when I return into workspaces that I can't technically leave for different situations, I am not completely depleted. So yes, choosing people to support you, but also making sure that in spaces where you have a choice, always choose spaces that value you and allow you to exist in peace. And also advocating for myself too when I can. But that's the major thing that comes to my mind and how I cope. Either choosing the right spaces, either at work, or if I can't leave work, then choosing spaces outside of my work that feed me, that value me, and like replenish my energy, just so I'm not depleted.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for both your responses. I really like that you touched on finding opportunities, finding people within those spaces that kind of remind you of yourself, where you don't have to pretend or you don't have to put on a face or feel as though you have to prove yourself constantly, but also opting out of sometimes those patterns where we want to volunteer for the extra task because we feel like we need to prove ourselves, but also knowing that it's not your job. Like, you're showing up, you're doing what everybody else is doing, and oftentimes you're doing more than that, but we always feel that pressure to overperform. But challenging that, because nobody can just go all the time. And I feel like that's why at times it's expected of us, because we always feel like we need to do it. And then it becomes kind of what we're known for. It becomes part of our personality or part of our character. And it just makes people depend on us even more. So I like what both of you said. And I think that's great tips for people who find themselves in those spaces. So to conclude this episode, I know we discussed it earlier, but the two of you are podcast hosts. So of course, we want to discuss your podcast, what's coming up, where we can find you in order to continue those conversations, because I'm sure many people would like to tune into Peas in a Podcast. So tell us where we can find that.
For sure. So we started the podcast because we are really close friends, and we'll typically have conversations about adulting, about our friendships, about trying to navigate work, trying to navigate life in our early 20s. And so we started the podcast just based off of those conversations, because we always created safe spaces for ourselves. And so we wanted to invite and create a safe space for a lot of people, young adults, people in their 20s, people in their 30s, people in general who are trying to figure out adulting. So the main three themes are adulting, navigating adulting, community, and wellness. And we are touching on these topics from perspectives of Nigerian immigrant women. And so you can find Peas in a Podcast on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else that you get your podcast at Peas in a Podcast. Primarily on social media, we post on Instagram pretty frequently. You can find us at Peas in a Podcast _TM and also on Twitter or X, like they call it now, at Peas in a Pod _TM. Yeah, so we are so excited to have the opportunity to be here and also so excited to share this conversation with everyone listening, but also excited for people to also get to know our podcast. If I do say myself, I do think we're pretty funny girls, so you enjoy listening to the podcast. We just launched our season, third season, which started in February, and we have conversations about like New Year goals. We have conversation. We have Moya's sister coming on to talk about sisterhood and just the importance of like sisterhood and the beauty of sisterhood. And also we have a couple episodes coming up in March. We're talking about friendship and what it means to be a good friend. So if these are conversations that you're interested in, please make sure to check the podcast out, definitely.
It's a podcast that I listen to personally, so I can give you a little recommendation that it is really funny and it's also pretty helpful and relatable for people who are navigating those same spaces, whether it be work or trying to get into health and wellness, etc. So thank you so much for being on my podcast. It was great speaking with you. And usually before I finish up, I ask my guest, or in this case guests, because this has been the first episode, multiple guests, I ask you to leave a quote or a thought that you'd like to leave the audience with. So this could just be something that you've had on your mind and that you remind yourself in your personal life that you think other people should know. And both of you can share one.
First, I would like to tell everyone happy Black History Month. I know maybe by the time you're listening to this, it's the end of the month, but happy Black History Month. And in regards to just being in Black History Month and the conversation that we're having, what I would like to leave everyone with is just a reminder that your identity does not have to be defined by society's narrow expectations. It is hard to say that, but you have to constantly remind yourself and constantly make sure that you're finding and rooting your identity in things that you value. You're allowed to embrace your uniqueness, pursue your passions. You're enough just the way you are. And yeah, so rooting your identity in things that you value and in your community and a community that enriches you rather than the narrow expectations of society.
I really like that one. That is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I feel like Tristan was more like really good thoughts and just like well thought out. And mine's just like, have the audacity as a straight white man. The way they show up and the confidence that these men have is just, it's something that really irritates me. But I think we can learn a lot from how confident they are and how they can like apply to jobs and not even care if they're qualified for it. So I think we need to have more confidence in ourselves, regardless of what society tells us. And a way to do that is by surrounding yourself with people who will continue to speak life into you. I think it's really important to surround yourself in communities and spaces where people are telling you that you should definitely go for that opportunity. Don't think about X, Y, Z, like just apply and see, or maybe it's not a job, but just show up as your most authentic self. And I think don't second guess yourself. Continue to remember and affirm yourself that you're supposed to be in these spaces. You're allowed to be in these spaces. It might not look like it, but take up space. And I would like people to think about, you know, this world, this life is quite short. So we get to choose how our life is supposed to look, regardless of so many like different hurdles that we might have to jump. But if you do have opportunities where you get to choose what you want out of this life, try and choose the one that you would be happy with. Then you would just want to see what's on the other end of that decision. So, and that's what I would say. And happy Black History Month.
I'm definitely writing that on my journal. Have the audacity of a straight white man. Thank you, Moyo.
Because one thing they're going to have is the audacity.
Exactly.
So happy Black History Month again. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Thanks again to Tosin and Moyo for being on today's episode. I know that this episode is coming towards the end of Black History Month, but I think it's still right on time because we can use it to reflect on our experiences. And our experience doesn't just stop at the end of February. It continues on. So hopefully this conversation was both lighthearted and fun, but also allowed you to understand whether you are Black or not, some of the experiences that maybe friends, family, etc. face. So like I said, you can find Tosin and Moyo's podcast called Peas in a Podcast. You can find the link to their podcast linked in the episode notes. And please let me know what you thought about this episode, what you took from it, etc. As well as follow the podcast Instagram at SincerelyJadaPod. Until next time, sincerely, Jada.